Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because this is Colombo Chronicles Live, and you are listening to The Rose, Rose Colombo, every Wednesday right here for you. And soon we will be entering into the world of authors and experts, and we have a fantastic author and expert on our show today. And she wrote the book, Sex and the Cyborg Goddess, going back to the 60s and 70s. Everyone wants to know, if you did not live through the 60s and 70s and the sexual revolution going on between men and women, then you are going to be fascinated by what our guest has to say. Alexis Raphael, she wrote the book, Sex and the Cyborg Goddess, and she has quite an extensive background. And we're going to tell you about her background in just a little bit, and we're going to tell you her real name in just a little bit as she goes by a pseudonym. And I don't know about you, but I can hardly wait to find out what she has to say about the 60s and 70s versus what's happening today, and of course what's happening in the Senate with the appointment of Judge Kavanaugh and the allegations by Christine Blasey Ford and the other witnesses, from what I read today, have recanted their stories and the male witness apologized. So this is going to be very, very interesting indeed. It's on everybody's minds. Everybody's glued to social media. Everybody's glued to the news. So stay tuned, because that will be coming up very soon. But talking about her book, Sex and the Cyborg Goddess, George Jeffries, the Emmy-winning writer, producer, associate professor at USA School of Cinematic Arts, wrote, quote, "To my knowledge, there are no other screenwriting books on an adaptation that are as global or as inclusive of women and minorities." Professor Krasilovsky, now you know her name, Professor Alexis Krasilovsky, inspires both screenwriters and students alike to broaden their world and their perspectives. And I think that's what we're all about. We're all trying to broaden our minds and to figure out how we can all get along in a world where sex is on everybody's mind, it appears, most of the time, whether you're in politics, whether you are in education, whether you are in the media, because we've had all the allegations and charges made against many top-ranking producers in Hollywood and celebrities. So we're watching this cycle of sexual evolution and sexual revolution going on that began way back in the 60s. This is still going on today. So I don't know if we're ever going to resolve the issues or the problems that we're confronted with on an everyday. But going back to that time in American history, if you live through it, there has always been sexual harassment against mainly women. Today, I think there's sexual harassment also against men, not probably as much as women. And women have had sexual harassment and had to work through it and fight for sexual equality for forever, let's say. And of course, we can go over to the Middle East, and my heart goes out to those women because they and their children, they have no liberty, they have no rights, they have no freedom, they can't speak out, they can't be individuals, they can't pull off those veils and look pretty and have self-esteem and confidence and be free ladies to be what they want to be, do what they want to do, because they are obligated to a one nation of, that includes 57 nations, of the same religion and the same foreign ideologies that suppress and oppress and maybe depressing some of the women. I'm sure that they try to fight back for freedom, liberty, rights, individuality, the right to drive, the right to wear a bathing suit, the right to act, dance, sing, all of those things. But it would be very, very difficult for them, and it appears to be very, very difficult for them to do so without fear. So fear is the biggest enemy of all. In America, we're very fortunate, thank God, that we have a means to speak up, speak out, whether it's in lectures, in classrooms, in the media, going to the press, writing books, doing public speaking, being advocates for justice. I've been an advocate for justice for 25 years. I've helped women across this country who were victims of gender bias in the family law courts. And I've been told many, many stories. I also have firsthand experience also writing that book of my memoirs of gender bias in the family law courts. I have documentation, I have done research, and I have done a six-year report on the gender bias that I turned over to the FBI in a confidential investigation that was turned over to the government, and there was a federal investigation done in our county. And things did change. We also proposed laws that were implemented. Personally, I wrote an amendment to the U.S. to the California Constitution, and it was approved by the Office of the Attorney General. And unfortunately, I didn't have the time or the finances to get the signatures and the petitions and all the signatures needed to get it on the ballot. But who knows? Maybe it'll be on the 2020 ballot. I mean, everything has a timing, everything. Whether you're fighting for sexual freedom, whether you're fighting for conservatism, whether you're fighting for liberalism, whether you're fighting for your right to enter our country, it doesn't matter. It's an ongoing, never-ending cycle of people wanting to be free and wanting liberty and wanting rights and individuality. And that is, and this is the only country in the world that gives us such an opportunity. And thank God we live in the United States of America. Thank God, because I get up and thank God every day for life, liberty, freedom, and health, and family and friends, and I'm sure many of you do as well. Whether it's God or a higher power, whoever you pray to, be grateful, be thankful. And this is the season to be grateful and thankful and to harvest new friends and to give back to old friends and new friends if you can. And on that note, I'm going to take a little break. And I will be back in just a moment on Colombo Chronicles Live. And soon we'll be entering into the world of authors and experts.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car... Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Hi, we're back on the air with authors and experts coming up. Thank you so much for joining Columbo Chronicles Live right here at Blog Talk Radio Worldwide Podcast. And we have a fantastic guest. I'm so excited because some of the things I agree with her and other things we're probably not on the same page as much, but I love expanding my mind and I love hearing from a wonderful, wonderful novelist, and her name is Alexis Raphael. She wrote the book, Sex and Cyborg Goddess, and it is exciting. And Anna arrives, it says, at Yale just as it's going co-ed. Can you imagine that? So I want to hear about that. It also says Alexis Raphael is the author of Sex and the Cyborg Goddess. She is a writer, a director, under the name Alexis Krasilovsky. Her films include End of the Art World, Exile, Beale Street, Let Them Eat Cake, and Women Behind the Camera. She is the winner of 5 Best Documentary Awards. Krasilovsky is author of great adaptations, screenwriting, and global storytelling. Routledge, the poetry chapbook, DVD, Some Women Writers Kill Themselves, and co-author of Shooting Women, Behind the Camera, Around the World, Intellect U, Chicago Press. Alexis was one of the first women to graduate from Yale. She also holds an MFA from Cal Arts. So let's say hello to Alexis Raphael. And let's get started. Hi, Alexis Raphael. Thank you for joining us on Columbo Chronicles and Authors and Experts Corner.
Well, thank you, Rose, for having me. I'm really glad to be able to talk to you today.
Oh, I'm happy to have you here, and so is our audience, because you have some interesting things to tell us about your book, Sex and the Cyborg Goddess. And it goes back into the 60s and 70s, which even if you didn't live during that time, you are interested. That will never go away, that interest and that inspiration and that movement from the 60s and 70s. So first of all, why don't you tell our audience what inspired you to write Sex and the Cyborg Goddess?
Well, I'd be glad to, Rose. Writing a novel about sexual harassment and its long-term consequences was a way of making sense of my own experiences. That's where the inspiration came from. And when the Me Too movement came into being, then I felt, well, it's really time to get a fictional story of a young Yale co-ed facing sexual harassment out into the world to help other women who'd experienced sexual harassment to heal and survive. The novel tells the story of a young woman's experiences with a conservative Yalie who's very much like Brett Kavanaugh. Although it's not a portrait of him, I published this novel before the confirmation hearings began, but if my description of the secret society guy in the novel gives readers a better sense of the kind of mentality that we're dealing with and considering for the Supreme Court, then I'll feel I've done my civic duty this week. So I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk with you today. Should I go on or do you? I just feel like...
Oh, I was just... I just wanted to just ask you a question right now. I was just wondering how you feel about, since you brought up the hearings, how you feel about the presumption of guilt prior to the hearings and the testimony, because that bothered me a lot. So I was wondering your perspective on that.
Well, it just reminds me of when I was at Yale and having to debate with people who had gone to prep school and knew how to debate. They already were very firm that they were going to become lawyers, and I felt a bit naive. I feel that it's really important for not just me, but for the fact that there are thousands of women all over the world speaking out right now is just really crucial. If you're just about to read the novel, then Anna losing her virginity to this arch-conservative whom she meets at a get-acquainted meeting at one of Yale's secret societies can actually be read today as a metaphor for the potential submission of our society to Yale-educated conservatives like Kavanaugh. And at Yale, we have to remember also George W. Bush was once president of Delta Kappa Epsilon, to which Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh also belonged. And in the 1980s, Delta Kappa Epsilon, or DEEK it was called, became infamous for having its pledges march on the Yale campus yelling, "No means yes, yes means anal," and other unfunny jokes that can't be repeated on the air. And Yale's sexual harassment issues did not go away. They're rampant throughout our society. It's not just Yale. And I wanted to write about these kinds of problems, both on college campuses and in the film industry, which I did in Sex and the Cyber Goddess.
Okay. And so what do you think it will take for the Me Too movement, and do you think it will gain lasting traction in America?
Well, I think it's so important that women are speaking out. It's great that social media and blog talk radio like yours makes this possible. We still have a lot to do in terms of getting enough women into positions of power. For example, in publishing, the New York Review of Books, Book Forum, New York Times Book Review, and other periodicals. In those periodicals, women's books have often been neglected in favor of writings by men, horribly disproportionately so. And, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Women's Review of Books. So we need to get more women into being taken seriously there, but also we need to get more women into politics, as well as every field where women can contribute. And until there are significant numbers of women leveling the playing field, we can't trust that our collective voices will make enough of an impact to change the world. And by women, I mean a diversity of women, women who are successful at combating ageism, women who can contribute the perspectives of a variety of communities, whether that they're Black or Latina, Asian American, Pacific Islander, Native American, as well as women of different economic backgrounds and sexual persuasions. We need to understand women from all different walks of life, from those who are entrenched in the male power structure to those who are sex workers or refugees or filmmakers. I try to include as many women and minority screenwriters as possible. For example, in my book, Great Adaptations, Screenwriting and Global Storytelling, in one part of that book, I quote the great Nigerian writer Chinua Achebe, who shares the Bantu philosophy, Umuntu Nigumuntu Nagabantu, or in English, a human is a human because of other humans. And I think of this declaration when I consider what women's empowerment is all about. We may have been isolated in our domestic prisons, behind typewriters, in the lab, but by coming together in our fight against sexual harassment, for example, we are not going to be trampled on any longer. We refuse. And, of course, the patron saints of the Me Too movement have been Anita Hill and now Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, in addition to the actresses, anchors, and development executives who've spoken out against sexual harassment in the media. The spokeswomen for this movement have included Jermaine Greer and Gloria Steinem, Oprah Winfrey, and many other really important women. And in film, in the field of filmmaking, director Maria Gaisa has been a central figure in bringing sex discrimination to the EEOC and the ACLU. But every woman who is marching in the Women's March or standing tonight against Kavanaugh's confirmation, every woman, famous or otherwise, is a woman to be reckoned with. As Laura Morgan described it on Facebook this past weekend, and I'm quoting from her, women uniting for this global problem. Especially when it comes to the upcoming elections, numbers count.
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of women who don't believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, and there's just as many women who do. So you have the division as well on that issue, or they doubt her story very much. So
have a fair FBI investigation instead of a sham one, then maybe there'll be additional information that we don't yet know that will make that situation much clearer for us.
Yeah, it will absolutely have to be up to the Department of Justice to do that. So why did you use the pseudonym of Alexis Raphael rather than your real name?
Well, first of all, as I think you were struggling with it too, it's pronounced Krasilevsky, but that's such a long name. But
I'm trying.
I have another answer, though. I mean, the novel is set in the early days of sexual liberation, and the protagonist experiences sexual harassment, but she also experiences the euphoria of the sexual liberation movement that was pre-AIDS, pre-conservative backlash. And there are many really erotic passages in the book that I would not be able to read on the radio, and my father shouldn't read them either. He's still alive. Him. I love my father. I thought it best to use pseudonym, but I haven't been secretive about it like the way, you know, Bob Dylan was about Bob Zimmerman. I want people to be able to see the films that are fictionalized in the novel, like, for example, End of the Art World, which is a send-up of the New York art world in the days of Andy Warhol. And those films are available on Amazon Video Prime through my real name, which is Alexis Krasilevsky, with a K.
Krasilevsky. Did I say that right?
Great. Thank you. That's Colombo.
I'm trying.
We got it.
Is the Anna in your novel, is she really Alexis Krasilevsky?
Well, that's a really good question, and I guess, you know, people want to write their doctoral dissertation someday. I'm sorting it all out. But basically, my novel, Sex and the Cyborg Goddess, is a work of fiction, and I may have experienced the sexual liberation era and anti-Vietnam protests and Black Panther demonstrations of the 1960s and the 70s. I definitely did, but not in the same way. Unlike Anna in the novel, I did let sexual harassment stop me. Once I got into the film industry, instead of going to bed with the last producer I worked for in Hollywood who wanted me to watch his footage with him on his king-size bed, I retreated safely, I thought, into academia And the books which I wrote while a professor became a kind of R&D or research and development for creating the character of Anna as she moves forward through the 70s and 80s in L.A. and Europe and India and New York. But some of what Anna experiences did come from my own life. For example, like Anna, the Yale student, I protested against the war in Vietnam, but I didn't dance topless in the fountains of Washington, D.C., dropping acid. I know that my life is full of flaws and that I still suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, from sexual harassment, especially this week and last week watching Dr. Christine Blasey Ford on television describing what she went through with Burt Kavanaugh. And I tried to create a flawed character in Anna, not a Wonder Woman role model, but a character that so many of us, I believe, can relate to and whose best efforts lead to survival, but not to the top of the world, not the top of today's world. But nevertheless, I feel that Dr. Ford is a true heroine of our times. Also, while in academia, working full-time as a professor at California State University in Northridge, I spent many years teaching screenplay adaptation. And my lectures and research fellowship resulted in a book called Great Adaptations, Screenwriting and Global Storytelling, which was a finalist in the American Book Awards last year. And it's published by Routledge in New York and London. And I've also been speaking about adaptation at CBS Studios and on writers' conference panels around the LA area. And in January, I'm going to be giving a 5-day screenplay adaptation workshop at the International Academy of Film and Media in Bangladesh. And writing this book, Great Adaptations, gave me the confidence to write the screenplay adaptation of my novel. And it remains to be seen whether Anna is a heroine or more likely a flawed anti-heroine whose major battle is the right to persevere in a man's world.
Well, that's always been a battle since time began, and we're still battling it today, right? So that's perfect. And every woman will want to read Sex and the Cyborg Goddess. And right now I'm going to take a little break, and when I come back, I would like to ask you if you could share a few pages from Sex and the Cyborg Goddess with our listeners before we have to close our interview. Because I think they would enjoy that. Could you do that for us when we come back?
Oh, sure.
Right?
That'll be great. And I'll use a slide whistle for a couple of racy words that the FCC wouldn't approve of.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment.
It'll be fun.
We'll be back on Columbo Chronicles and Sex and the Cyborg Goddess with Alexis Raphael. We'll be right back.
Listening is an art. An art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Thanks for listening up to Colombo Chronicles Live, and we're talking to Professor Alexis Krasilovsky, who wrote great adaptations, screenwriting, and global storytelling. And we were talking to her about her latest novel, Exciting, 60s-70s Revolutions, and how it's evolved into today, and the hearings in D.C. over the Supreme Court and appointments of a U.S. justice. And she writes under the name Alexis Raphael, that's R-A-F-A-E-L, Alexis Raphael, and the book is Sex and the Cyborg Goddess. And I asked Alexis if she would read from her book just a few pages. And Alexis, are you ready to do that?
Oh, sure I am. Thank you, Rose.
Okay.
So, this section comes from the first part of the novel. Part one is called Pillow Book of Abigail Collette. And Anna has just started the semester and has been sleeping. She lives in a dorm on campus with the two other female roommates. And the section starts like this. The phone rang early the next morning. Anna Freed. Yes, this is she. Tammet, she had slept through her psychology class. Where was Tammy? This is Lauren Stimson, the treasurer of Wolf's Bones. I'm calling because, I don't know if I should mention this, you probably know about our secret societies. Well, is your secret society tapping me because of my good looks or because word has gotten out that I'm fast? He laughed. No, not at all. That is, we usually look for potential leaders of America. You mean like the assholes who are bombing at Vietnam, she retorted, thinking about what Silvio had been trying to tell them in the van. There was a momentary pause. Why don't you just come to our Get Acquainted meeting this evening, and then we can decide if this is a good idea or not. She faltered. They would decide together? In other words, she wouldn't decide whether out of curiosity or not whether to attend the meeting in the first place? She struggled with this logic, unable to come up with a fast enough rejoinder a second time. Lawrence picked her up in his black sports car with the top down, his sad gray eyes offsetting the brutality of his square jaw. Compared to St. Paul's School with its cross-country skiing, Yale thus far was somewhat boring. He figured that the three cases of Coors in the trunk of his sports car would perk up their first meeting. Anna looked attractive enough with her miniskirt and pearls. He wondered about the other girl, Jillian Carmichael, whom he'd sent Oates Pitzer to pick up and deliver to Wolf's Bones. The room was full of medieval furniture and eager young men in jackets and ties. Anna recognized a Glenn somebody from her seminar in La Divina Commedia. He gave her a watery grin. They were taking off their shoes in preparation for a get-acquainted exercise. The first round of beers had been passed around the gargoyle-studded room, and now Glenn, who introduced himself as Glenn Cox III, started mentioning his great-grandfather, who was once the ambassador to Madrid, and the powerful connections this opportunity would afford them, until someone politely interrupted and suggested that this was going to be a non-verbal exercise and that everyone should hold hands. Oates was reaching out to her and Jillian, when Anna suddenly leapt to her silk-stocking feet, remembering something she'd read in an underground newspaper on a bus in Lower Manhattan. Secret societies are no more than breeding grounds for the CIA, she announced, grabbing her shoes and storming out of Wolf's Bones along with the only other woman, a diminutive blonde in beige. Jillian Carmichael turned to Anna in the hallway. Wow, that was gutsy, she said, as they put their patent leather pumps back on. You certainly know how to confront those guys. We should really discuss this, maybe over at the Elizabethan Club over tea? But Anna brushed her off, striding past the gray stone statuary outside the building. Inside, after a brief debate, Lawrence Stimson was appointed the task of asking the co-eds if they had been offended by any of the introductory remarks. Anna was walking across the old campus in a light drizzle when he caught up with her. Just think how we're outnumbered, Larry. I mean, the whole situation could have deteriorated into a gangbang. I mean, with all that beer. You're paranoid but cute, he declared. He had already apologized to Jillian, the blonde, and thought his work was done for the day. He looked Anna up and down. Would she like to go to the Friday Night Classics with him? To have a date, any date, spelled progress to her. If they heard, they could catch a flick by Francois Truffaut in Lindsay Chittenden 101. Anna was intensely moved by the indignity suffered on screen by Antoine Doineau, the poor, neglected French boy of the 400 blows. His parents reminded her of her own, always fighting about their marriage. Even if Marty and Madeline Freed had a lot more money, enough to send her off to college, and her mother was just as cold and calculating as the one in Truffaut's film, bribing her to get more and more A's, telling her to wipe the smirk off her face. By the time Antoine was dragged off through the dark Parisian streets in a police van, Lawrence's arms were wrapped around her thin, quavering shoulders. She had completely forgotten herself. She was sobbing softly, losing herself in Lawrence's masterful hugs, hugs her mother could have given her when she was small, but didn't. Lawrence continued to hug her as they walked out of the sweaty classroom-turned-cinematheque. In the shadows of the entryway to his dorm, she wiped her eyes, red and swollen from crying and hard contact lenses. She excused herself to use the bathroom so she could take them out. Should she take off her silk stockings before meeting him back in his room, or wait? Can you still see? He asked her as she felt her way towards the inner sanctum in the dim light. He had put on Joni Mitchell's new album. Fortunately for him, his roommates were out late. Well, nothing has sharp edges anymore. You don't look like such a hawk, she said. Just a wasp. She hoped he liked her wit. She let him press her against his J-press suit. On the dark red leather couch, he took off his jacket. She might as well surrender to something, she thought. She didn't want to have gotten on the pill for nothing. When he pulled off his undershirt, revealing an appendix scar, it looked like a millipede crawling in soft focus over his abdomen. It completely turned her off. Then she caught a glimpse of his purple, swollen... But she couldn't pull herself away in time. He had a brisk way of thrusting his in and out of her that wasn't what she imagined losing her virginity would be like. And when he thrust it in too deeply, it hurt. No, stop, she cried. Oh, Lawrence, no. Despite her pleas, he wouldn't stop. His mechanical hammering got faster and faster. She closed her eyes and tried to listen to Joni, anything to avoid her own feelings or his look of brute determination. Did you put in your diaphragm? He whispered belatedly. There was already something squishy inside her. My diaphragm? She asked. You silly goose, said Lawrence, already getting dressed. Don't you know, free birth control is part of the co-ed experience. She lay there, wondering whether he'd be more hurt than relieved if he found out she was already on the pill. The very first morning after being dropped off in New Haven, she'd visited University Health Services for her free prescription. But he probably thought she was waiting to get on the pill just for someone like him. Lawrence somehow managed to look formal in his boxer shorts, his nakedness above the waist, offset by a posture that beckoned from a comfortable future when he'd been meeting with heads of states. She gave him an enigmatic smile while he finished getting dressed, unwilling to admit how much he had hurt her. It seemed to take him forever to adjust his tie in the mirror. She felt cold and goose-pimply as he glanced back at her nakedness under the open window. By the time she got dressed, she was angry. If she hadn't gotten on the pill in time, she would probably already be pregnant. She would probably be getting an abortion or getting expelled and committing suicide before finishing her freshman year. Not that Lawrence cared.
Wow, that's really powerful, and it happens a lot of times. Of course it does. To young girls, and fortunately, you know, they will be reading books like Sex and the Cyborg Goddess so that they do whatever they can in their power to be aware and to avoid these situations, if at all possible, and because there is a difference between consent and non-consent, of course, and everybody knows the consequence if you don't have protection. And the problems that follow.
So I just want to thank you so much for sharing that, and also for you'll have to have you back to share great adaptations, screenwriting, and global storytelling, which many of my people in my audience are interested in, by Professor Alexis Krasilovsky. And Alexis, now is your time to shine. You can give any message you want to our audience, and you can let us know if there's any social media that you that they can access and where to buy your books.
Oh, thank you so much. People who like to read paperbacks, that's great, but just wanted to mention that the novel is also available on Kindle and in audiobook read by the great Linda Feitak, who used to read for hours to the director François Truffaut. So they've got a choice between a paperback and ebooks and audiobook. So I thank you so much for having me on your show, and if there's anything else I can answer, I will, and otherwise I hope you have a good day, and I hope that the whole listening audience goes out and votes this fall.
Me too. It was a pleasure, and thank you so much, Professor Alexis Krasilovsky. And again, her books are Sex and the Cyborg Goddess and Great Adaptation, Screenwriting, and Global Storytelling. Thank you, and have a blessed and a wonderful day, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
Thank you, Rose. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our guest, Alexis Raphael, also known as Professor Alexis Krasilovsky, has left the building, and we are going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we will leave Authors and Experts Corner, and we will enter into the world of politics.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
That's right. Listen to Columbo Chronicles, and you can listen to archive shows with very prominent guests, experts, and authors from around the world who join us every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. here on the West Coast, where it's sunny. And we're supposed to have some rain, but I think they're fooling us because it was supposed to come yesterday. We don't have a drop. So that wasn't fair, and that wasn't funny. I was all excited and waiting. We desperately need more rain in the West Coast and on the West Coast. But nonetheless, it's 3 to 4 p.m. over on the East Coast, and I still want to remember all the North Carolinians and Florida and all the people in the different states that were flooded, made homeless, and lost their jobs or businesses perhaps, and had to go to shelters and were evacuated. God bless you. We're all still praying for you. You're still in our prayers. We did not forget you, fellow Americans. We are all in this homeland together. We are all one family. Whether we get along or don't get along, agree or don't disagree, that's what's great about America. Laws can be changed and amended, and new laws can be written. Old laws can be voided out. And even if we don't like a law, you don't have to get stressed out about it, because we can always attempt to put our politicians in office and urge them to repeal, nullify, or rewrite a law or amend it. So laws are meant to be changed, altered, amended, and they are. So don't get too stressed out, because nothing lasts forever, not even the law. And we just left Authors and Experts Corner, and we have Dr. Professor Alexis Kozlowski, who supports, we have a different point of view from many of you, who supports Christine Blasey Ford's story and opposes the appointment of Judge Kavanaugh. And this is what makes America go round, is we can express our own points of view. We can decide who we want to vote for, who we don't want to vote for, who we want on the Supreme Court, who we don't. And that's part of our process and our system, thank God, that we can speak out. And we should always be speaking out without being fear of violence or vandalism or being targets and so forth. No one should become violent or vandalize anybody's property or attack anybody personally in public places or in their private homes or businesses. That is not the American way. We are a republic operating by the rule of law. And it is presumption of innocence until proven guilty, or we will lose due process of law. If it's accusation only by mob rule, we must be civilized and we must let the process of the law evolve. Because I was in the court system for 15 years, and the gender bias in the court system during those years in the 90s was horrendous. In fact, I even helped save a judge from being kicked off the bench during the O.J. Simpson case, and that was Judge Nancy Wiebenstock, and I was invited to be on her committee to oppose the recall of Judge Nancy Wiebenstock, and we even have photos, and I helped with her meet and greets, and the members of my organization, Women Fight Back, who are against the gender bias in the family law courts, we supported her, and lots of American people didn't understand why we would support her, but we supported her because based on our research about the judge, she was a very fair judge. She was not biased towards men or women. She was also a high-powered prosecutor before she was a judge, and they chose her to sit in on this case, and then she almost lost her seat on the bench. So we came forward. I was the only group of women who actually came forward to give her our support because we knew that she was not gender biased, that she was, any decision she made was because she believed she was following the law. Whether or not she made a mistake or not is not for me to say, but we know that she always attempts to follow the rule of law and to be fair to men and women in the courtrooms, which was rare in the 90s because many of us suffered greatly from the gender bias that was going on in the courthouse. And, of course, you'll be reading about that in my book that will be coming out. It's only so many hours in the day. I'm trying to finish up my second edition of Fight Back Legal Abuse. It will be called Americans Fight Back Legal Abuse. And then I am writing the memoirs of against the gender bias that I suffered and so many women that I helped throughout the country suffered and lost their property, their homes, their children, because they were females, believe it or not. And some of them went to jail for many ridiculous reasons. And many of us were threatened with jail for opposing the gender bias. And I led marches and I led protests and helped women get out of jail who were trying to protect their children from pedophiles and so forth. And so it was quite a mission and a calling, and it's a passion of mine to seek justice for both men and women. And I think it starts with self-respect. And I think it starts with integrity and decency and honesty and good character. We don't have a lot of that today on either side of the aisle. So I'm not going to just say it's Democrats. I'm not going to just say it's Republicans. It's in our country. It's nationwide. It starts everywhere. We can see it on every level. And we can see it in our own lives, in our own families and friends who somehow lost their way. So this is something we need to look at ourselves. And are we people of good character? Are we honest? Are we listening to both sides of a story, both sides in a hearing? Or are we just listening to one side? Did you know that some men are sexually harassed too? And that there are women who've gone to jail for sexually harassing men or who have been sued, such as one of the witnesses in the Ford case who made allegations and recanted them. But we found out that she had been sued by her employer for harassing the employee, sexually harassing the employees. So that's not good. So think that we need to be fair to both men and women, although women have been the majority of victims of sexual harassment, in my opinion and in my research, and gender bias and those bad decisions made against women that can destroy their lives. And many of those women that I've helped were very depressed or they were suicidal, and it took a lot of effort to convince them that they can become survivors and that they can help themselves, their children, and others in the country fight back against sexual harassment and against sexual abuse and against gender bias. There's many reasons that people file charges or accuse people of wrongdoing. And it could be not only about sex or sexual harassment. It could be an allegation and accusation in order to gain assets, property, money, or it could be for revenge or a vendetta. We don't know, and that's why we have to be careful about condemning anyone. Before the hearings, and before the testimony, before looking at all the evidence and the witnesses, and making sure that we have given both parties fairness, justice, common sense, and not judged them by the presumption of guilt, but the presumption of innocence. And that is very important because injustices can come knocking on anybody's back door. It can happen to you. A neighbor could accuse you of something, anything. A stranger could accuse you of something. So we have to be really careful and not to judge other people because injustices, as I said, can come knocking on your back door unexpectedly. So this is America, and we have due process of law. And what bothers me, as I said, I've been an advocate for justice and an activist for justice for many years, and especially helping women in the family law courts. And I can tell you that we are exceptional. We are a country that is exceptional because of due process of law. We are a country that's a republic that operates by the rule of law. And when we forget that, and we have politicians who are willing to lie, cheat, take bribes, trample on the Constitution, the federal government trampling on the Constitution and limited rights and broadening and expanding their rights beyond what the Constitution allows. We have to be alert and vigil, proactive, and pay attention because we don't want to be accused of a crime, which I have been accused of a civil matter. It was a civil matter of wrongdoing, which was a total 110% lie, a 1,000th percent lie. And fortunately, it wasn't criminal, but it was civil. But I still fought back, and I won because I fought back. And that's why I called my book Fight Back Legal Abuse, because you can't be a have a pity party. You can't expect someone else to come out and save you, even if it's a lawyer. You have to be proactive. You have to want to win your case and prove your innocence. You have to be strong. You have to keep a sound mind, a strong body, and a strong will to overcome any false accusations to ruin your reputation and your life and your finances and your job, your career. You have to be able to be strong. And I find I was strong because I believe in a higher power named God. And any higher power that you believe in that is good and you believe is going to help you, the supreme power of the universe, whatever, that will give you more strength than thinking you're alone and you can do it all on your own. No, because when injustice comes knocking on your back door, you will suffer post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't care who you are. I don't care how strong you are. To this day, I still fear anyone knocking on my door without calling. And I think that reflects many, many thousands of victims of legal abuse. Because when you've been abused and you've had people knocking on your door to serve you this subpoena, which are ridiculous, and because they're trying to build a case against you and cause you to become depressed and not being able to function properly, don't let that happen. Do not let that happen. Remember, you do have a higher power. And there are resources and persons you and organizations you can call for moral strength, for prayers, for expression of what's happening to you. Because I know for a fact, when I started Women Fight Back, there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to go. No one cared. People listened. They were nice, but that was your problem. And many didn't believe the allegations against a judge or a lawyer back in the day. And they believe that a judge or a lawyer wouldn't do that, wouldn't be gender biased, because we are told they are objective and a lawyer will defend you. Well, unfortunately, there's over 800,000 complaints a year that go into the state bars and the American Bar Association, and they've stopped counting. So, protect yourself. Try to stay out of the legal system. Try not to violate the traffic laws. Keep your car in good condition so you don't get stopped by a cop. Now, I support the police. I support the sheriffs. In my youth, I worked for the sheriffs. And I also worked for psychiatry, the chief of psychiatry. So I am familiar with problems, people's problems. And as a young girl, I was shocked at what people do. And so I just want to say to you, be careful who you associate with. Be careful to follow the laws, follow the traffic laws. And if you do have a situation, be proactive. And don't think that you're going to write a check for $10,000 and you're safe. And put your lawyer on a pedestal. You must be proactive. You must provide him what he needs so that he can win your case. And that's just a little tip from the road. So remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me. But together we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone. When you tune in to Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday from noon to 1:30, to 1 o'clock here on the West Coast, and 3 to 4 p.m. on the East Coast, and you need to check your time in your state or in your country. And, I want to thank everybody from all the different countries that listen to Colombo Chronicles. Thank you so much. It's very exciting to me that you are listening from across the oceans. I hope from our experts and our authors that you are gaining insight into what's happening in the United States, and also that you are learning from people who are experts on specific subjects and topics that are of interest to you and of human interest, whether it's animal rights, whether it's romance and love, whether it's gender bias, sexual harassment, whatever it is, we keep open minds, we let other people talk, and we their opinions. It's okay. But we don't become violent. We don't vandalize people's homes. We don't threaten people's lives. That is not respectful of human rights. It is not respectful of fellow Americans. And remember, what you do to others, there's karma. And what you do to others can happen to you. So think before you act. And again, God bless our firemen and our police and our sheriffs and all the medical staff, because they work 24/7 around the clock to save lives. And may all of our politicians, whether Democrats or Republicans, independents, that they will seek the truth. And they will look themselves in the mirror to find that truth. And they will look up and not down for the truth. So stay healthy, stay happy, and have a great Wednesday.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.